This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on October 18th, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next matter on the agenda is Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on RightMarch.com PAC A09-23.
Madam Chair, I think this is held over at my request.
Yes.
I was trying to consider in my own mind whether or not a contingency agreement should be disclosed or not, if it were, and under what circumstances. But as I look at the agreement and go through it, my view is that whatever methodology is the appropriate way to do it, there should be some type of disclosure as we go forward. And I'm told that there's a way that you could report it either as debt with a notation that it's a contingent debt, or maybe under Form 99 you could talk about the fact that this is something else that's going on and explain what it is. But in some type of disclosure, whatever methodology would be appropriate, that would be my recommendation. So I would vote for that finding. Whereas before I wasn't so sure.
Commissioner McGann.
Could I ask, do we think it's contingent debt or we think it's debt? Because I think those who have to do these contracts in the future will want to know whether or not there's a reporting issue, I think is a separate issue. But when people review these contracts and advise clients, they probably want to know, are we saying that it's contingent debt or are we saying it's actually debt? Or do you think it just doesn't matter because it needs to be reported either way?
Well, I guess. Asking me to give an answer for the commission?
No, you.
Well, I think there's a potential that, first of all, I think the contract is not clear to me exactly how it would be implemented. And as I get down into it, it says, for example, the client may elect. Well, if they don't elect, it's not exactly sure what exactly would happen. And as I read through it, I mean, before I'd be willing to sign it, there'd be a lot of questions I'd want to have answered. So if you want to refer to this, I'd say it's too vague to say one way or the other, except I wouldn't sign this thing. But
unfortunately, we're sitting in judgment of those who have.
Yeah, well, I understand that, but there's enough of a potential for a debt to be incurred that I think, regardless of how you look at it, that I think it needs to be disclosed. For example, here it's the campaign may decide, wait a minute, our clients are only going to get, my clients are going to give $100 and I'm only getting potentially five, maybe less. And that may come to pass fairly quickly that's not a good public relations contract to enter into, and they may want to get out, and they can't, and they find out there's a lot of money being owed. And, you know, to me, I think in the interest of disclosure of the potential liability and the fact that money is being made and generated by it, and it's not just the potential liability on something other than money, then I think we should have a disclosure with the opportunity to be able to dig further on it if the public felt they wanted to, rather than get to the very end of it and say 0000 and say 500,000 is owed. And that, I think, is much more risky in terms of disclosure than to provide disclosure as a, you know, on a monthly basis of how it's being accrued, or and then point out that it's contingent or there's some contingency involved. But, you know, we're kind of confining ourselves to this document, and I don't think we should live and die by what the terms of this say in terms of giving clients advice in the future, because I don't know how prevalent a document like this is, but pretty risky.
Well, that's the problem. People are, whether we think they should or not, people are going to look to this and this contract to see what works and what doesn't work, because these kind of deals are somewhat prevalent. And if the view is that the contract is too vague to even say when the debt occurs, but we know there's some debt in there somewhere, at least that's debt. But if it's a contingent debt, the rule doesn't require reporting of contingent debt. And I guess maybe we do agree, I think, that at least it is the terms of the contract that govern the relationship between the parties and whether or not there's debt. Right? At least people should be able to, if they write a clear enough contract, at least they know they're in charge of their own destiny because they're in charge of their own contract. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I think that certainly the contents of the contract are going to govern that, and I'm not comfortable using this as a basis for, you know, giving anybody in the public advice on which direction to go.
Okay.
But, you know, there are significant potential liabilities in being incurred along the line, and I think in this particular case, I wouldn't call it a pure contingency contract. Pure. Madam Chair, I'd move to approve all three findings.
Okay. Give us 1 second. Okay, the motion is to approve the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion fails 3-3. Are there any other motions?
Well, I move to approve findings 1 and 3.
Would you might maybe consider just moving finding 1 for now?
Sure.
Thank you. All those in favor of finding 1?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Finding 1 passes 6-0. Any other motions?
Well, I'll move seriatim if you want to get the record.
That's easier.
Okay. Commissioner Walther?
Proceed that way. I move that we approve finding number 2.
Okay. All those in favor? Or there's a
discuss the motion from
yes,
Madam
yes,
Chair.
Yes, absolutely.
I agree with parts of finding 2, the part that the respondent demonstrated that the terms of the contract are in the normal course of the vendor's business. I think there's agreement with that part. The part that I disagree with is the whether it's debt, and I think that's part of finding 2. Is that part of finding 2? Yes,
that's correct.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm reading the report correctly. So I just wanted to state that because when this goes, when it has to be rewritten, I think it would probably help the auditors to know that there is agreement on part of finding 2. It's just a portion that there's disagreement.
Madam Vice Chair.
I'm sure it's helpful for the auditors to know that, but if there's a vote and it splits 3-3 on the entire finding, then the whole thing is going to move to additional issues. So if there's some part of this that you're willing to approve, then I think you need to you don't need to do anything, but it would be preferable, I think, to move to approve that part of it so that so that part of it could be in the main body of the report, and then the actual issue of contention would be isolated in the additional issues. Am I getting that right?
That would be preferable, yes, ma'am.
But it's I can't do that for you because I don't know. You know, it's up to you which part you're willing to agree with or not.
Well, it's not a friendly amendment, right? He's moved finding two, mm-hmm. right? So we should vote that down, and then I can make a motion on the part of finding two.
That's
how I would suggest we do it procedurally. And although, you know, I appreciate the vice chair saying it, but that's the next step after we vote on the pending motion.
I didn't realize you were going to make a subsequent motion. That's all.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion fails 3-3. Is there another motion? Commissioner McGann.
I'd like to move the part of finding two that concludes that RMC demonstrated that the terms of the contract are in the normal course of the vendor's business, and the appropriate supporting language in the report that supports that conclusion in finding two.
Thank you. All those in favor? Oh, yes, sure. Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you. I'm looking at the memo, and I just want to check in with the auditors. I hadn't realized that was part of the finding. That was a finding itself. Is that if you can help me? I understand that's part of the underlying. You know, there's a lot of stuff that usually happens in the lead up to a finding, and a lot of legal issues and factual issues get resolved. But was that a finding that you made?
Yes, part of the finding, there were two parts to it, the extension of credit, whether that was permissible, and then the reporting of the debt.
Okay, so you viewed those as separate findings?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Separate issues within the finding.
Okay.
Wait.
Is that what the first sentence means, that audit staff determined that the – is that what you're saying is the first piece of the finding? I'm just trying to understand in the memo where this splits out. Because the recommendation is to find that they failed to disclose the debt, so that's why I was confused.
Commissioner McGann?
Yeah,
Go ahead.
Yeah, the first sentence, we determined that that there was no impermissible extension of credit. And then what remained was that they failed to disclose the debt. So that's the only remaining issue, is the disclosure of the debt. We don't find the first part to be a matter that needs to be pursued.
Commissioner McGann?
Let me ask you, if the first part, meaning whether the contract was in the normal course of the vendor's business, right? If it wasn't in the normal course, that would result in an in-kind contribution. So it wouldn't be a debt reporting issue. It would have been a more serious problem.
Correct.
It would have been an in-kind. And they spent... We have the submission by the Political Call Center, LLC, in response to prepared by counsel for them explaining why this contract was not out of the norm. So once that issue went away, it became a debt reporting issue. So you don't get to support the debt reporting issue without buying into the predicate decision that this is not an in-kind. Right? I mean, the debt issue is contingent on the first issue. It depends how you... Right. If it's a corporate in-kind, it's not. You don't really. The debt. I guess you could still report it as debt. But that's reporting illegal conduct. So.
Yeah. There were two issues addressed here. One, whether it was a permissible extension of credit, and they resolved that. The second part was the requiring of disclosure of what we thought was a debt.
Okay.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At the risk of being inconsistent, now that I've heard it all laid out, I'm not actually convinced that it's possible to parse it out that way. Or it may be possible to parse it out that way, but I'm not sure I'm comfortable voting for the motion the way it's been expressed, because what we do here is we approve findings, particular findings, and there's a finding on extension of credit. There aren't two findings in there. There's one finding. Now, maybe we're back to where Commissioner McGann started, that it may well be informative to the auditors to know that commissioners thought that part of the analysis was correct. But in terms of approving the finding, there isn't a finding on that to approve.
There isn't at this stage. The reason I thought that was a better course was, and I believe it was in a prior audit, and I think it was Friends of Wiener, where there was a misstatement issue, and we took part of the issue out and moved it to other issues, and part of the finding remained. So that's why I thought in this case they've addressed the first part of the finding, and nothing else needs to be done, but the second part remains an issue because they didn't disclose the debt. So that's why I thought it would be better, as suggested, to be done in two parts, that there be a finding on that we address the finding with respect to the permissibility of the contribution, and that turned out okay. And what would go to other issues is the fact that had been reported as a debt, and there may not be agreement on that.
But that's not. I hear you, but that's not what you did. That's not the way this is laid out.
Not the way it's recommended in the ADRM.
Right. There could potentially have been a different recommendation that split those issues out, but that's not what we have in front of us.
Wait a second. Hold on. Yes, it is. Do I have the right document? Because I have finding 2, it's page 6. It says finding 2, extension of credit by a commercial vendor.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Correct.
And what are we? We are finding that there was not an extension of credit by a commercial vendor.
Correct.
Correct. Right? So the way it's captioned in the audit report is extension of credit by a commercial vendor. And my motion read verbatim from the summary sheet, which is copied again in the actual analysis. Page 12 says, based on the additional information provided in response to the interim audit report, right? Because the interim report actually said it was an in-kind.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And the commission saw that document, and that went through the commission.
Correct.
Correct. So we agree with the auditors up until that point. The respondents in this matter beat that back, so to speak. They demonstrated to the auditors that any extension of credit was in the ordinary course of business and thus did not contribute to an excessive in-kind contribution. That reading this right from the report.
Correct.
This is what we're voting on. And we've already had a vote that's gone 3-3 where half the commission has already supported that. At this stage, not only this stage, but in the interim stage. I mean, the converse was true at the interim stage,
that it was a
potential problem, and now that they've demonstrated that it's not a problem. And what's
correct.
Left is whether they should have reported it as debt. But the finding is it's extension of credit, it's the finding.
Madam Vice Chair.
Well, I think part of the problem is that we're not actually voting on the draft final audit report. We're voting on the audit division recommendation memorandum on rightmarsh.com PAC. And this is the sort of Byzantine process that we've come up with, and that has a finding 2 on page 1 of agenda document 12-65. And I think what we have in front of us is, you know, the procedurally what we need to do is adopt or not finding 2 in the recommendation memorandum. That's my point. It could have been done differently, I suppose, but that's the way it's in front of us.
Fisher McGinn.
That's why I thought we'd just vote on finding 2, and then if we wanted to show agreement, That's why I said, just said what I said, because they're going to have to rewrite this. And I think there is agreement on the issue that has been resolved to the auditor's satisfaction. Now, if for some reason, is there disagreement on the predicate issue here? I mean, is there an extension of credit that results in an in-kind contribution? The auditors don't think so. We don't think so, we being half of the commission. Does the other half disagree with the auditors on this point?
Commissioner Welty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I read this correctly, though, there's a lot of ifs left in this draft. And I'm a little reluctant to say in the interim stage, okay, fine, we'll move ahead with you on this. But you point out two things that late last night I was concerned about, and that was, although contracts from similar vendors were provided, PA did not provide for this review any additional contracts it had with other clientele.
That's correct.
It also said, because of this, it does appear these types of contracts may be fairly standard in the industry.
That's correct.
And based upon those two facts, I'm a little reluctant to say today that I'm going to buy off on that point 100%.
We felt that was enough to determine it was a normal course of business based on all the other contracts we have, even though we didn't have one. I believe, and Rhonda can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe we had an affidavit from the treasurer.
Affidavit's nice, but it's not the best evidence. If you're looking at evidence, we're talking documents.
Yeah. No, I understand. But based on the affidavit and all the other contracts, we felt that was enough to determine that there wasn't an extension of credit. It was in the normal course of business.
Why wouldn't they hand the contracts over to you? I mean, was there any discussion about that? Because you were looking at other contracts from other vendors, apparently, that were similar. But
I can only assume that they were requested from council. But the council are the ones that actually went out and got contracts. Political advertising never gave any contracts to the council.
So my vote was really to support, okay, at this stage we'll buy off on your theory, but I would like to be able to say at some point, let's see what the evidence shows. I mean, maybe it's a contribution, maybe it's a debt. I don't, right now you're buying off on the idea that it's a debt. I think that's reasonable. I mean, I there certainly is a potential for a huge debt, so that's an easy one, but I think it might be premature to try and parse it out. I'm not sure where that gets us.
Commissioner McGann.
Just so the record's clear, the auditors originally suspected that this was an impermissible extension of credit. When I say impermissible, meaning for purposes of FICA, an impermissible in-kind contribution.
That's correct.
It wasn't Right March. It was the folks providing the fundraising service that spent all sorts of money proving this up. There's a 20-page legal brief in the file that does attach contracts that are similar to this contract. So to say that, well, right, you know, that this commercial for-profit business didn't produce actual contracts by all its other clients, to me is a red herring, because it doesn't have to. There's confidentiality issues. They don't have to give us their client list, but they have given us quite a bit of information that demonstrates that this contract is well within the norm of what they do in their ordinary course of business. Now, let me ask the auditors, first, that to make sure that I'm not overstating or understating the record, but two, they have given examples of other contracts or language or something, right? This is not just a situation where they did a one-page affidavit and you said, oh, that's fine. We have a 20-page legal brief here. There was a lot of discussion on this issue. These folks spent a lot of money on a fancy lawyer at Wiley Ryan, who used to chair this agency, to explain that this was okay. This isn't cheap. So could you elaborate a little bit on this issue about how much went into your recommendation? Because this does, I don't want this to be portrayed as you guys just said, oh, close enough, and moved on. This seems like a very – and I would actually – if we're going to criticize, I would say you guys dug too deep on this, because that's just more my thing. But, you know, you have to do what you need to do and be satisfied as an auditor. But to me, it's overkill what they went through.
They did supply the affidavit from the head of political advertising who said it was standard industry, what she did give to other their clients. And the attorney did provide 32 contracts from various all different types of committees and organizations, which I went through every single one of those painstakingly. And it does seem to be, based on those contracts, an industry standard. In fact, maybe they even got a little bit more than a lot of those contracts allowed. They were given 5%. So based on what we had, that's how we made our decision.
What do they do at the end of the contract? Do they have that monthly invoice that keeps creeping up to the point where you go broke if you decide you want out of it?
At the end of the contract, at the end of that contract, which was August 15, 2012, that phase would be over, and anything that was left from the invoicing would just simply be gone, as long as they didn't terminate the contract.
In the other contracts?
Yes.
Mr. Calvert, did you have a comment or someone?
Not at this time, Madam Chair.
Mr. Peterson.
Oh. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that I understand where we are right now. We just had a motion on finding all of finding two, to approve all of finding two, and obviously part, the first issue that was resolved in that finding is that that the auditors concluded there wasn't an impermissible extension of credit. But now just hearing the subsequent discussion, it sounds like Commissioner Walther, do you actually not approve of that first? Because it sounded like you have some questions about whether or not even that portion is correct. So I just want to know where we have agreement and where we don't.
No, I'm buying off on it for today. But I think when it comes to the point where people say, "Hey, well, wait a minute, you know, we can't discuss this further as we go forward, as facts might come up," I want to be able to say, you know, we went that far, but there may be some issues there that are still outstanding. I just was aware that other contracts were provided, but that always makes me concerned when they provide somebody else's contracts and not their own, and I just didn't know what to make of that. And then it sounded like there's kind of a tepid language on the part of the audit staff on it, so I thought it's still an open question. But I'm willing to, you know, I will support going for finding two to get us down the road.
Mr. Calvert?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to clarify, Commissioner Walther, that we were trying to follow one of the pieces of precedent on this, an advisory opinion from way back in 1991 involving the New York State Democratic Party, which considered an arrangement very much like this, concluded that it was an in-kind contribution, but it concluded that it was an in-kind contribution in the absence of a record presented by the requester of a similar type of program by the vendor or by other vendors in the industry. In the opinion, either one would do. And it was our conclusion, and I'd refer you to our comments on the draft report at page 7 of our comments, that a significant difference in this matter and the 1991 advisory opinion was that the committee and the vendor here had provided a record of the sort that had not been provided in AO 1991-18. It is correct that what we got from the vendor about its own practices was an affidavit from the president, but we did get 32 contracts that they had obtained from other vendors somehow, both on fundraising projects done for other political committees and fundraising projects done for non-political committee nonprofits. And in our comments, we go through where the parts of this contract that gave us the most pause and compared those to what was in the contracts of the other vendors to determine whether or not there was there seemed to be an adherence to industry practice. And at the end of the day, we recommended to the audit division there was no income contribution here.
Well, I mean, that's a really good input, and I appreciate it. And I'm softening up a little bit on that. But as Brad will, my EA will tell you, that we discussed this, and my original gut was that it was a contribution, and we were going on and on about that, and I wasn't ready to completely buy off on that today. But on the other hand, it sounds like you really did cover that point well.
Mr. McGann?
Can I try to clarify so that folks who listen in here and are subject to this audit know what we may or may not be doing? Political Call Center LLC is the company that provided the service to RightMarch. RightMarch is, of course, the group that's been audited. Political Call Center has this contract. They've signed it with RightMarch. If Political Call Center were to use the same exact contract with its next customer, is it the position of the commission, some subset of the commission, that would result in an in-kind? It would seem to me, after supporting finding two in total, Political Call Center now can use this contract again and again and again, and it will not result in an in-kind. This customer will have to report debt, perhaps, depending on how one wants to read the votes at the commission. But it seems to me Political Call Center can use this contract. I'm not talking about other people or or expansive version of the contract. Same exact language. It's the same exact contract with their next customer. Are we going to have this same discussion if that customer gets audited? Or is this actually deciding this contract is okay, which I think that's already been decided in part by supporting finding two?
Commissioner Bowerly?
From my perspective, I think the question here is there's always parts of findings that we probably could find some small agreement on. And I think the only question is, at what point is it a separate finding, or is it some predicate course to a finding that we're getting to? For example, in the audit we just voted on, there was a recommendation to find that there were, I believe it was a... Audit staff recommends the commission find that Minnesota DFL has demonstrated its non-federal accounts did not overfund its federal accounts. That obviously was the result of part of the process. I'm sure there were, we could split lots of things out. I think my original question to the auditors was, is this a separate finding? We sometimes make, I guess I call them positive findings, affirmative conclusions. That wasn't the recommendation here. That's why I asked the original question. It's not clear to me that this is one of those findings that easily splits out. We don't often make findings that are issues that were resolved along the way when we're getting to other findings. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. This one wasn't presented to us. And we have this, I have lots of issues with Directive 70, but this is what we're voting on, is this recommendation. So that's kind of where I'm stuck. But
Commissioner McGann.
So can they use the contract or can't they? The finding is extension of credit by a commercial vendor. Did they extend credit by a commercial vendor that's an in-kind, or didn't they? That's what the finding asks. The debt issue is something that only arose after the main meat of the finding came and went. So can they use the contract or can't they use the contract? We have to decide that today. We can't pretend like that's not before us. It is. It's squarely before us. We owe it to the public to make decisions on things so that people know what they can do in the future. Can this company use this contract or can't they?
Madam Vice Chair.
Well, the part that I disagree with is whether it's squarely before us. I mean, I think part of the problem is that the finding is actually mislabeled, because it started out at the interim stage in a different direction. It's labeled, we all know headings aren't dispositive. The heading on finding two is extension of credit by a commercial vendor, but the recommendation, the thing that we are supposed to vote on under Directive 70, says the audit staff recommends that the commission find that RMC failed to disclose debts totaling a little over $1.5 million. So that's actually the finding.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me ask first the auditors, and then perhaps Mr. Calvert can help me out. What this may be would be a bit unusual since the finding is based on the same underlying nucleus of facts. But what if we were to split the finding so that we had a one finding that was about the extension of credit, and the other and a new finding, it could be finding three, and we push three to four. That would be on the disclosure of debt. Would that present any logistical problems or any other problems for the auditors?
None that I can think of.
Okay. And Mr. Calvert, is there anything under our own procedures that would create any roadblocks for us to move to split the finding two and make that two separate findings?
There is not, Commissioner. As a matter of fact, Directive 70 does contain some provisions that that perhaps would have been helpful here, in that it says that the draft final audit report, to the extent possible, should break separate components of a finding into separate sub-findings to facilitate ease of consideration and voting by the commission. And if commissioners here wished to, given the theory behind Directive 70, the final report is the commission's document, the commission wished to take votes on the sub-findings and direct that the PFAR come back with separate, breaking those into separate findings or into sub-findings within a finding, or however you all would want to have it divided, that can be done.
Okay. Madam Chair, can we all take a minute?
You can take a minute, sure.
5 minutes, 3 minutes?
Sure.
All right.
Consideration of the audit. There is a motion on the table made by Commissioner McGann. Any further comments on the motion? Commissioner Walther?
Yeah, previously I mentioned that I'd like to hold it over so that we can consider maybe the impact of how to divide that into pieces, and so that we can vote on all of the potential pieces at the same time. In other words, I have no objection to breaking it down to elements of the finding if that's the will of these three of you. No problem there. But I think we ought to take a look at each of the elements and get them phrased so that we can all vote on them at the same time.
Okay. So if we carry this over to the next meeting, the motion, Commissioner McGann, I believe, doesn't wish to withdraw his motion. So if we table it, my understanding is that would revive itself at the next open meeting.
Yes.
Is that correct, Mr. Calvert?
I believe that's correct, Madam Chair. Under Directive 10, it is proper for the commission, either by motion or unanimous consent, to postpone consideration of a matter to a date certain. If by motion, obviously that would have to be done by majority vote. If by unanimous consent, as is customary, the matter is held over, I see in Directive 10 nor Roberts any particular impediment to resuming at this point when the overall main matter comes back before the commission the next time.
To resuming the discussion of the motion that's on the table?
Yes.
Okay. Any additional comments? If not, we will reconsider. We will continue considering the motion that's on the table at the next open meeting. Thank you.